Hello and welcome to this week's Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host. I'm back. I'm Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me today, he's actually live in studio.
Marshall Griffin, sitting in front of an actual microphone and not on the telephone.
You can hear him a lot better this week. And
Jason Rosenbaum of the St. Louis Beacon.
Joe's out this week. Where is she, Jason?
I believe she's in France.
She's in but tough life.
I know. You know, us Beacon reporters, we go to France, we go to Italy. We just live the high life. What can I say?
I'd do pretty good if I actually make it to the lake on a rare occasion.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, I was out in D.C. But, Marshall, you've been pretty busy. It's kind of like being in France, almost as lucrative as being in France. You've been covering the Department of Revenue. That's almost as exciting.
It's been very exciting this week. I can tell you this. I don't think I've seen senators, especially Kirk Schaefer, I don't think I've seen him as visibly angry as I've seen him in years past. I mean, not that he is a hothead, not that lawmakers don't get excited at issues every year.
He has an acerbic side to him. I witnessed that in 2008 when he ran for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I mean that with all due respect and not an insult. But he can jab at people. But continue, Marshall.
Yeah. He is very, very upset with the things that have been going on at the Department of Revenue, and also with, as we learned yesterday, with the Missouri State Highway Patrol. And when I say the things that have been learned, I'm not, picking sides either. But what I'm telling is that they were under questioning. They found out yesterday, and it was confirmed by Doug Nelson yesterday, confirmed by Colonel Ron Replicle. I think that's the correct pronunciation. On two occasions, the Missouri State Highway Patrol actually did forward Missouri's entire list of concealed carry weapon endorsement holders to the federal government, specifically to the Social Security Administration, which was conducting an actual criminal investigation and had requested the database, the concealed carry database. The question is whether or not that was legal. Colonel Replicle says, as best as he can understand, yes, it was legal and proper. They were assisting an actual federal law enforcement agency with investigation. And the deputy director of the Department of Public Safety, Andrea Spillers, I believe, I hope I'm getting her name correct, said, yes, the way that it was handled, we followed the correct procedure, the correct legal procedure for revealing or sharing that list of concealed carry holders to the federal government. Kirk Schaefer and other members of the Senate Appropriations Committee absolutely not buying it. Their opinion is that they are mistaken in their interpretation of the law at best, or are lying at the worst. So they're very unhappy and very visibly unhappy with what's going on.
Now, you've been following this probably closer than at least I have. I was in Italy when the controversy broke. But from what I recall, didn't Department of Revenue officials when under questioned about whether conceal and carry information went to the federal government, didn't they deny that was happening? Isn't this contradict previously what they had been saying?
Yes and no. It depends on how you look at it. When asked specifically, is the Department of Revenue holding us in a database for the Department of Homeland Security for them, they said no, that is not happening. And basically were truthful in that area as far as saying yes, we are taking and scanning this information and saving it in a database, but we're doing it as a means of being able to combat fraud. And they cited a case in St. Joseph where a former license fee office worker had been making illegal driver's licenses for people who were in the country illegally, and said, we're creating this database in order to combat that type of fraud, and that this information is not being forwarded to the Department of Homeland Security. So in that, yes, they're telling the truth, and that was kind of known. What this is a different type of situation. Instead of information being sent to the Department of Homeland Security, this involves the Highway Patrol, which is not a part of the Department of Revenue, but within a division of the Department of Public Safety, mm-hmm. With the Highway Patrol giving the entire concealed carry list to
another federal agency.
Another federal agency.
But the Department of Revenue gave them this list. They gave it to the Highway Patrol, who then gave it to the Social Security Administration,
yes.
Correct?
Yes. So I guess you could say, yes, the Department of Revenue was involved in this one because they are the ones that have the concealed carry list, because the concealed carry endorsement is listed on the driver's licenses. So, yes, the Department of Revenue actually was involved in this as well.
Do you think that this, you know, I've been monitoring a little on Twitter in between the 10,000 other stories that I've been writing. It seems that, you know, Republicans and conservatives are making a really big deal about this. They see this as a violation of privacy, possibly breaking state law, as you mentioned. Democrats, on the other hand, are saying, well, this is information that federal government likely already has. Why is this a big deal? It seems to me that the reason why it's become such a big deal is from at least from my faraway perception, these department officials keep kind of fueling the fire with their testimony and giving senators that are upset about this reasons to be even more upset. That's my perception. Is that kind of the reality down there in Jefferson City, or is it a little bit in the middle?
I'd say it maybe a little bit in the middle. I will tell you this. The perception is that this is perhaps some backdoor reach of the Obama administration making moves to try to eventually find out the names of all concealed carry gun owners in Missouri so that maybe someday in the future the federal government will come and take away their guns if the Second Amendment is ever repealed. That is the mindset of the Republicans and those who are alarmed about the list getting out there. They're thinking that this is another big government encroachment, and that the Department of Revenue and the Missouri Highway Patrol, and whether by deliberate action or by passive non-action, Governor Nixon endorsing this as happening. You're already seeing TV commercials popping up. WrongWayJ.com commercials are back on TV.
$400,000 ad buy by United for Missouri.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of money.
Yeah. So, you know, Governor Nixon is having to answer questions about this. He was asked about this today, I understand, when he was here in St. Louis, in the St. Louis area, touring tornado damage. I understand that he didn't have much to say about it.
No, it was pretty much the same thing that he's consistently said throughout the other times. This one was a little bit different because he said, you know, we're here to focus on storm damage. We aren't here to talk about the Department of Revenue. But he gave the typical, we've been complying with all state laws. Everything that we've said is completely factual. And, you know, that was his statement on it.
Well, something really interesting happened this morning before Colonel Replicle began answering questions from Senator Schaefer and the other senators on the panel. They're going through the state budget right now, and part of all this, part of the equation here is if we don't get satisfactory answers with what's going on, we're going to completely zero out the budget for the Division of Motor Vehicles and Driver's Licensing.
Not the whole Department of Revenue, just
right,
that.
Just
but that's
that.
Still a big deal.
Very big deal.
Because
yeah.
That's a pretty essential service that the Department of Revenue does. Mm. So, I mean, that's a pretty sizable threat and a big leverage on their part because they appropriate the money. If you don't have appropriation authority to do something, then you can't spend money on it. That's
yeah.
That's why that's a big deal.
All right. And let me get back to my point before I circle away from it. this morning, Senator Schaefer wanted to ask questions of Andrea Spillers, and was told, and I was in the room when this occurred, he was told that Andrea Spillers would not be available for today's hearings. That even though she was expected to appear, scheduled to appear, said that she would be there, was told, no, actually, she will not be here after all. The reason why is because she is touring tornado-damaged areas with Governor Nixon, and that Governor Nixon has specifically asked her to join him. And when the governor asks, an underling in a state agency to do something, you do it. But anyway, so Andrea Spillers was supposed to appear and testify as to the Department of Public Safety's opinion as to whether or not it was legal, whether they thought it was legal or not for the Highway Patrol to hand over the concealed carry list to the federal government. And she was conveniently called away by Governor Nixon, which was, this really infuriated and amazed, I should say, Senator Schaefer and the other senators. It's like, oh, how convenient that the governor would call her away so that she cannot answer our questions today. They were very upset about that. So, what's more, they weren't, demeaning or trying to, belittle, a natural disaster or, I'm not sure I'm getting the right word there, but they were saying, this is more, it's more important that she be here and answer our questions and that she be at a photo op where, she's not really needed to be, they were questioning her need to actually be at the governor's side and, said, we're going to have to extend these meetings, possibly into Friday, and it's going to delay us, doing these hearings. And it was going to mess with the schedules of a lot of people that were on the committee. What it came to, the next question was, how fast is the governor's new plane that the Highway Patrol just spent $5 million on? Can we get her back here? And as it turned out, she, I'd say within 20 minutes, was not only back in Jefferson City, but walked into the room. So she actually did show up to answer those questions.
Oh. So my wrap-it-up motion was premature. That actually was needed to be included.
This was the M. Night Shyamalan twist. I was not expecting for that.
But I guess that is a fast, expensive plane.
Yes.
I guess it was worth all the money.
Yes. Or maybe she was. Maybe she hadn't left yet. Who knows? Where we're sitting. But anyhow, go ahead.
Speaking of money.
Well, I was just going to add one other thing. One of the questions that was asked of Andrea Spillers was, did the governor know about the Highway Patrol giving this the concealed carry list to the federal government? And she said, no. As far as I know, the governor has no knowledge of this, to which Senator Ryan Silvey actually said, do you think we are idiots? That was his literal response to that. So
this has been a pretty contentious political issue, and I don't think it's going to be going away anytime soon.
No. Not at all. Nope. Not when the Republicans control the legislature. But speaking of money, now my transition
makes
sense. Let's
talk about something that also isn't going to be going away anytime soon. This is something that I've been working on for, about a month and a half here, and we just, released it to the public. We're starting a new project to keep track of all of the money that lobbyists spend on our legislators. For January and February, it was $338,000, which is a pretty absurd amount of money considering it takes place in Jefferson City, where it's not a very expensive place, and it's only 2 months out of the year. What's also surprising is that about 90%, over 90% of this was for meals. And I mean, Marshall, you report in Jefferson City. You probably know more about lobbying than I do, but it seems that the vast majority of it is spent on meals and
possibly drinks, alcoholic beverages at those restaurants, which
meals,
can drive up a bill,
Yeah. And this is in spite of the fact that legislators receive a per diem of $104 a day for every day that they're in session. Mm-hmm. That's for lodging and meals.
Yes. I will say, Chris, I was really glad that you put this in totality. Because I think too often that, sometimes they just show one gift or, somebody got cards tickets and point that out specifically.
Right.
And that's by no means impugning anybody who did that. I'm certain that I did that throughout my career as well. But I think it shows that this isn't something that goes to one party, one particular person. It's
rampant. It's everywhere.
It is systemic.
And it's bipartisan.
But I will tell you, Chris, and this is just to kind of showcase how this I don't want to say it's a problem because that's putting my own spin on it, but this issue has been basically the same for almost 5 or 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
I did basically the same story that you did for the Columbia Tribune in 2007 where I took all the data from the Missouri Ethics Commission, sliced and diced it, showed who had the most, who was given the most. Nothing has changed since then. Absolutely nothing. And I don't think it's going to change anytime soon because there's no incentive for these legislators to pass their own bills. Putting something on the ballot will cost $500,000 to $1 million.
Yeah, who's going to bankroll the thing to say that you can't spend money on legislators?
And I just see this as the status quo. I will tell you one thing. This has become a weapon to use against political candidates who are running in political races. I think you saw that with Jim Lemke last year when he ran for re-election in the state Senate district. Now, the groups that were attacking Lemke for that weren't trying to get rid of him because he took too many lobbyist gifts. They were trying to get rid of him because he opposed red light cameras. He was opposed to trial attorneys. He was opposed to tax credits. He was opposed to a lot of different things that arouse the ire of some pretty powerful interest groups.
But, and if I can throw in, also opposed to accepting any federal dollars from Washington.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they saw how much money or the total amount that he had taken in gifts and used that as a way to attack him. Mm-hmm. And that has been used before in other campaigns because this information is public. It's easy to get from the Missouri Ethics Commission. Mm-hmm. And if you take in too many gifts, it can be a used as a weapon against you in a campaign. But as I mentioned, they're using that as a target point. And I think that, you know, maybe some of these legislators saw that and maybe are thinking, well, maybe I should change my ways. But I mean, it seems like from your reporting that's not across the board.
Well, let's talk about one of the big problems. One of the big problems is out of the $338,000, 75% of it, you don't really know where it's going. Only about 25% went directly to the legislators. 75% of it went to committees mm-hmm. and the General Assembly. The problem with that is, one, it disperses the responsibility for that gift, and two, you don't know who actually received that
gift.
It's
probably a lot of people. In fact, I think
it doesn't have to be, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Let's say you invite the House Budget Committee out for a meal. Mm-hmm. It could be only one member of the House Budget Committee, one or two members of the House Budget Committee, a committee of 30. Mm-hmm. You don't have to show any proof that all 30 of them were invited.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't go to that one or two legislators that actually received the gift.
Yeah. And I think that's definitely a possibility. I think also what happens is, first of all, a lot of committee hearings are catered, and that catering is paid for by
sure.
lobbyists. There's a lot of instances where lobbyists will set food in a particular office and people will line up and take it, basically, mm-hmm. be it legislators or staff. Marshall probably has seen this. There was a Pi Day at the Capitol that was sponsored by the Trucking Association.
Right.
That sort of thing usually gets tacked on to one or two legislators. So but this thing of concealing gifts, that's also been an issue for a long time. And in fact, there used to be a system in Jefferson City with caucuses. And the caucuses were basically used as subterfuges to do mm-hmm. exactly what you mentioned. And it seems now, I was looking at the House website yesterday, they've started these like issue committees
yes.
or something. Are those also being
issues.
Are
yes.
those also being used
yes.
as well?
At least one of them has received donations. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it involves Republican leadership that serves on it. I think it's maybe a 12 person.
Yeah, and because when they passed a ethics bill in 2006, making sure that caucuses couldn't take gifts as a caucus was a big selling point of that legislation. And it seems that if those issue committees are taking lobbyist gifts, that would kind of go around the spirit of that law. I'm assuming it's not illegal or anything like that, but that did strike me as circumventive. Is circumventive a word?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it yeah. did seem that because Not to date me, but that 2006 was when I was with the Columbia Missourian at J School, just like I'm sure you were at J School. And I remember that debate pretty vividly. Mm-hmm. Actually, Tom Dempsey was the sponsor of that bill when he was still House Majority Leader. So I'm assuming he's not going to set up a series of those in the Senate because that would be probably going against the spirit of that bill. But it's good to graphically see and to be able to go down the line to see how much these legislators are taking. It's only probably going to grow, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Unless something can be agreed to and passed, which I don't see happening anytime soon, it's almost a system if it's not broke, don't fix it. Or maybe in this case, right. if it is broke, leave it alone. depending on your which side right. of the table you're sitting on there. And one interesting point as well. This conversation brought to mind the redistricting battle between the House and Senate Republicans a couple of years ago. I happen to remember that I believe it was the House Republican caucus had a meeting that night. I want to say it was the caucus and not a particular actual committee mm-hmm. from the House. And their meeting was at Buffalo Wild Wings. Mm-hmm. Rather interesting. So that brought to mind, well, okay, who picked up the tab there, you know, for holding a caucus meeting at a local restaurant? And there's been a couple of committee meetings this year that have been held at the Jefferson City Country Club.
Yeah.
So that's or at least have been scheduled to. I believe one had to be canceled for some reason. But yeah, that's very much is going on.
Well, we detail literally every gift that a legislator has received from a lobbyist. You can go to stlpublicradio.org/news/lobby. And you can check it out. Check out that interactive graphic. But Jason, we got to talk about Medicaid, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Because there have been some developments this week.
There's been a lot of developments.
Too much going on this week.
And I'm sure Marshall has also seen this as well. First of all, I just have discovered this in the last few hours. The DSH payments that were going to be cut to hospitals apparently have been delayed. If I'm not mistaken, until 2015.
I believe that's correct, yes.
So, okay, that probably halts the urgency of this debate a little bit, but it corresponds with the news that kind of broke earlier in the week that the Senate really is not going to pass anything involving Medicaid this year. You know, John Lamping, although he is not in leadership – and is only one senator, told me very, very directly that they're not going to pass Nixon's 138% expansion. They're not going to pass a House reform bill. They're not going to come up with their own reform bill. The issue is pretty much dead until 2014. And, you know, for people who know the composition of the Missouri General Assembly, none of this is surprising because it was always going to be tough to get this through the legislature. But the fact is, when the Senate or at least one senator, and I'm sure his sentiment is not an abnormality.
It's not.
When they say that, it's pretty much over.
Well, you know, it's not even guaranteed that it's going to get out of the House either. There was when Jay Barnes's alternate Medicaid proposal, which is basically a smaller expansion, when it passed the committee, there were two no votes. One of the no votes came from a Republican. In fact, the vice chair of that committee actually voted no against this. He equated it to, you know, well, this is still, you know, for all practical purposes, Obamacare. So, I mean, it may not even get out of the House. So we'll know for sure in a few weeks as time ticks.
And I know we're kind of running a little bit long, but I do want to make this point that was kind of encapsulated in my Tuesday story, because I think it's actually quite important. I've said for weeks, if not months, that one of the biggest reasons why I don't think Medicaid expansion will pass is because some people who opposed even smaller Medicaid expansions in 2008 and 2009 have moved from the House to the Senate. And one of them is Rob Schaff of St. Joseph, who I talk about a lot and sometimes feel like I'm talking about him and trying to over-exaggerating his power. But he was mainly responsible for derailing Governor Matt Blunt's Insure Missouri. He has derailed a federal prescription drug database. He has shown that if he is opposed to something, he is very good at killing it. And he said this week on the Senate floor that no Medicaid expansion would happen unless it is paired with either very stark changes or outright elimination of the Certificate of Need program for hospitals, which, by the way, will almost certainly never happen because hospitals will fight that tooth and nail. When you put that condition to it, it should give pause to people who want any sort of Medicaid expansion that if he has other people with him, he has 3, 4, 5 other people with him, anything that is related to expansion is going to be filibustered indefinitely,
yeah.
Even if they come to a consensus. So even if this doesn't happen this year, this happens next year. I think there's still going to be a fight if they try to expand Medicaid based on the statement that he made. And it's not just that. It's also just other senators don't want to be perceived as going along with the Affordable Care Act, which they've opposed for a while. So that combination of things just makes it very difficult right now for this to pass. But it's an important issue. There will be, even though the DSH payments are apparently being delayed, it's still something that would affect Missouri hospitals tremendously. So,
and I think that will definitely give everyone an excuse, on the House and the Republican side to say, well, there's the urgency is gone now, or at least pushed back some. So I think that will definitely embolden the Republicans to not go anywhere with Governor Nixon's desired Medicaid expansion, or even Representative Barnes's smaller version of that. If the pressure's off, that's basically a green light to focus on other issues. And there's with just 5 weeks left and counting, effective tomorrow, that's probably going to get shoved to the side.
Well, that should just about do it for this week's show. Thanks for joining us all in studio, guys. You can read all of my stories at stlpublicradio.org and Marshall's stories, too. Marshall has had a ton of stories going up this week.
Feels like a ton.
Yeah. He's been working all the hours. And you can read all of Jason's stories at stlbeacon.org. You can follow me on Twitter at @CSMcDaniel. You can follow Jason on Twitter
at @JRosenbaum.
And you can follow Marshall on Twitter.
Marshall G. Report.
And just one quick announcement. I know if you've come to the end of this, you are really a Politically Speaking fan. We are now on We are now on iTunes. So
yes.
If you go to stlpublicradio.org, and you go to the part where it says podcasts, you will click on that and you will see Politically Speaking and you will have the chance to subscribe. I know that Sean Nicholson of Progress Missouri personally asked me about this a few months ago. Just to show that we are all about customer service here, we can now say that we are on iTunes now.
Yes, we should thank Madeline Painter, who works here at San Luis Public Radio, for making that happen. Yeah, subscribe.
It's great. There's no reason for you not to listen all the way through now. So
you can listen to the Beatles and to St. Louis Public Radio's Politically Speaking podcast
now on Apple,
on
right.
iTunes.
Well, we'll be back next week. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Until then, so long.
Subscribe.